Can you believe that the spring holy days are almost here? I know our girls can because last weekend they got to help clean out the van, which somehow there was a lot underneath all their seats. They also got to help us clean out the pantries, so they know the spring holy days are coming. Of course, in the lead up to these days, we focused our own studies and we've been hearing messages about Passover and examining ourselves. We've been preparing our homes and ourselves by working to remove that physical and spiritual leaven. But there's something else that we do at this time of year, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. It's an event that happens right between Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread. The instruction for this is held in just a single verse, but that verse resonates down through the years to us today. So our subject we're going to explore is we're going to use just a simple question to take a look at this. And I'm going to give you some possible answers to the question. But in the end, you're going to have to think about it yourself and provide your own answer. And the question is this: why do you keep the night to be much observed? Why do you keep the night to be much observed? Now, I will admit, when I first started attending United, over 20 years ago, I did not have an answer to that question. Of course, I was learning about the spring holy days and all that they meant. I wasn't keeping Passover yet because I had not been baptized. But I did do what I could to de-leaven my condo to prepare for unleavened bread. The night to be much observed? Well, that just, again, in my early years, that just felt like it was just a big dinner party kind of kicking off the spring holy days. Now, everyone else in the congregation, they seemed to know what was going on, and so I just went along with it. I could have asked why we were doing this, but I never did. And perhaps you were in the same boat when you started attending. So today's message should be a good review for those who have been around for a while. Now, for anyone newer or for the younger ears that are listening, this should give you a solid foundation to help explain why we're doing what we do. So again, our question is this: why do you keep the night to be much observed? Now, to explore this, we're going to cover three broad areas today. The first area is going to be when the night to be much observed was instituted in the Old Testament. Our second area is going to be taking a look at what Christ was doing on and around those days. And then third, we're going to look at what Paul and Peter have to say about being vigilant. So let's turn our attention to that first area, how it all started in the Old Testament. That's where we find our first answer for why we keep the night to be much observed. God told us to. If we just stop there, we're missing out on really understanding what the instruction is. Still, it is a solid foundation for where we want to start, so that's what we'll do. You open your Bibles to Exodus chapter 12, and you will find this verse is verse 42. Again, this is Exodus 12 and verse 42. It is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations. Now, we do need to understand this verse in the larger context of the chapter. At the start of Exodus 12, God's marking out the start of the holy year. He then proceeds to give Moses and Aaron instruction to be relayed to Israel. First thing that they're told about is Lamb Selection Day, which Mr. Chapichik talked to us about a few weeks ago. Then there are instructions for Passover and unleavened bread. And in this instruction, God also warns Israel that the 10th plague is about to hit. Now, prior to this, Israel was protected from the effects of some of the plagues. The swarm of insects, the livestock being diseased, and the destructive hail, they were automatically set aside and protected. For the first time in all of the plagues, Israel's told that they have to do something to be passed over. That, of course, was placing the blood of the lamb on the doorposts of their homes and not going outside until the morning. So these instructions are passed on to the nation, and they did as Moses and Aaron instructed. Now, at this point, we're going to take a closer look at what days these events were happening on, as we're going to tie it into Christ's experience on those same dates in a little bit later. So the lamb was sacrificed at twilight on the 14th of Nisan, and then that evening was the Passover in the nighttime portion of the 14th. So I should say it was twilight right before the 14th started, then the Passover was the nighttime portion of the 14th. So let's back up in our Bibles just a little bit and review Exodus 12, verses 29 through 32, starting in verse 29. And it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the livestock. So Pharaoh rose in the night, he, all his servants, and all the Egyptians. And there was a great cry in Egypt, for it was not a house where there was not one dead. Then he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, "Rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said. And also take your flocks and your herds, as you have said, and be gone, and bless me also." Now, if you read through this quickly, we might think that this instruction came from Pharaoh, Moses and Aaron heard him, and gathered up Israel and headed right out right then. But that's not the case. We see that plainly in Exodus 12, verse 22. "And none of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning." That means it was in the morning, the daytime portion of the 14th of Nisan, when Israel packed up and headed out. So let's pick the story back up in verse 33. "And the Egyptians urged the people that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, 'We shall all be dead.' So the people took their dough before it was leavened, having their kneading bowls bound up and their clothes on their shoulders. Now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in sight of the Egyptians, so that they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot, besides children." Now, from what I could discern from the commentaries, this journey from Ramses to Succoth was somewhere between 8 and 15 miles. Now, today, that might not sound like that much of a difference. You hop in your car, 8 miles, 15 miles, it doesn't really matter. You're there. But here, we have over a million people, once you include the women and children, traveling by foot, as well as taking all of their herds with them. So this was no short distance. They were really trekking. But finally, they do come to a stop, and they bake cakes of unleavened bread, as we see in verse 39. A camp of temporary dwellings is set up, and night arrives. So now we've arrived at the 15th of Nisan. Now, earlier, God had told the nation that this was the start of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But here in the course of these verses, we have an inset popped in for us. Right before it, we're talking about Passover and the start of the Exodus from Egypt. Right after, God goes back to instruction around the Passover. So to me, that makes this inset verse, verse 42, stand out even more. So let's read this verse again and notice a few things. Exodus 12 and verse 42. "It is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations." So the first thing we need to keep in mind is God is not calling this a holy day. The 15th of Nisan had already been set aside as the first day of unleavened bread. No, this night, the day after Passover, is being set aside as something special, something different. Now, it's from the King James translation that we get the phrase, "the night to be much observed," because this is how they translated the Hebrew word shemur. If you dig into some of the dictionaries, Strong's indicates this as having a meaning of observance, which is what we get from the King James. But Brown Drivers Briggs adds in that it indicates a night watch or a vigil. So this is reinforcing what it was that Israel and God were doing. And that's what we're remembering. I have to imagine Israel would have been watching very, very closely that night. They had been subjugated in Egypt for generations, and now they had just been set free. Just the night before, they had kept new instruction. And by their trust in God and that instruction, they were passed over in the land. And right after that event is when their freedom came. They were sent on their way, not empty-handed, but with great wealth. Can you imagine such a dramatic change of fortune happening in your own life? How would you react? I don't think it's a stretch to imagine that Israel would have been nervous or even fearful at this night. What if Pharaoh changed his mind and decided to come after them and take all that wealth back and take them back into servitude? Perhaps there was fear of what life would be like in the land that God was leading them to. I mean, just think about any time you've undertaken a significant move. It can be very unsettling to leave familiar surroundings. But 600,000 men and their families came to that inflection point that night. They had to choose. What would they do? Of course, they chose to believe God and trust in his promises and literally follow God's lead. Even so, they no doubt watched. But God was watching as well. If we read verse 42 from the English Standard Version, we can see it very clearly. It was a night of watching by the Lord to bring them out of the land of Egypt. So this same night is a night of watching kept to the Lord by all the people of Israel throughout their generations. Now, who could be a better watchman than God himself? That night, the 15th of Nisan, God was watching over them, but he was leading them to freedom, ensuring that they could safely leave physical Egypt. And that brings us to our second answer to the question of why do you keep the night to be much observed? It's because we're calling to mind how God brought Israel out with a mighty hand, but it should also be a very personal remembrance for each of us as well of our own path out of our own spiritual Egypt. The night to be much observed doesn't just commemorate some distant historical event. We can jump forward to Christ's time and see how those very same dates played out and how his life went. So let's move on from the Old Testament account and go to our second area, what Christ was doing on those same dates in the calendar. And as a point of reference, I did rely on the 3 days and three nights graphic from the UCG to make sure I had the dates correct. So I believe I've done all the math properly here, and I've gone over it and over it again, but if I misspeak, please correct me, but I think we're okay. In the Gospel of John, in chapter 12 and verse 1, we're told that Jesus came to Bethany 6 days before the Passover. So with Passover being on the 14th of Nisan, that sets his arrival in Bethany as on the 8th of Nisan. And it was at the dinner there with Lazarus and his sisters that Jesus' feet were anointed, preparing him for the coming burial. The next day, the 9th of Nisan, is what is commonly referred to as the triumphal entry. And as a side note, this appears like it would have happened on a Friday, not a Palm Sunday, as many churches would teach. The next day then, of course, that's the 10th of Nisan. And that's a familiar marking point from the Old Testament account. That was the day that the lamb was selected for the sacrifice. So, what was Christ doing that day? He's returned to Jerusalem, he enters the temple, and he has his authority challenged. We see this in 3 of the gospel accounts. So let's take a look at how Matthew records this. If you could turn over to Matthew 21, and we will read verses 23 through 27. And that's Matthew 21, starting in verse 23. Now when he, that is Jesus, came into the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people confronted him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority?" But Jesus answered and said to them, "I also will ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I likewise will tell you by what authority I do these things." So they tried setting a trap for him, and Christ is turning it back around on them. The baptism of John, where was it from? From heaven or from men? And they reason among themselves, saying, "If we say from heaven, he will say to us, why then did you not believe him? But if we say from men, we fear the multitude, for all count John as a prophet." So they're kind of weighing their options here. They're trying to figure out which is the lesser of the two evils of what we have to acknowledge here. And then they kind of weaseled their way out of it with a third answer. So they said to they answered Jesus and said, "We don't know." And he said to them, "Neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things." So again, if we read between the lines here, we can see that the chief priests were trying to trip Christ up. They were trying to force Christ into a scenario where they had an excuse to remove Jesus from the scene. But he saw what they were doing, and he tripped them up in the net that they were spreading. But we have to realize, though, that the chief priests, they were making a selection on this Lamb selection day. They just didn't realize that it was the Lamb of God that they were choosing. We see that their decision had been made and solidified a few days later as the plot continues on in Matthew 26. So if you please turn a few pages over there, we'll read Matthew 26, the first five verses. So Matthew 26, starting in verse 1. "Now it came to pass when Jesus finished all these sayings that he said to his disciples, 'You know that after 2 days is the Passover, and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified.' Then the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders of the people assembled at the palace of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas, and plotted to take Jesus by trickery and kill him. But they said, 'Not during the feast, lest there be an uproar among the people.'" So Christ had said in these verses that 2 days it will be the Passover. So let's go forward those 2 days, which brings us to the 14th of Nisan. Jesus shares the Passover with his disciples and institutes the foot washing and the symbols of the new covenant. And those are going to be covered in greater detail on Thursday, so we'll pass over those for now. It is important that we note that Christ was keeping God's command to keep the Passover on the 14th. He wasn't changing a thing. The gospel accounts show that his disciples fully expected to share this Passover with Christ in the evening portion of the 14th. They didn't question any of the instructions that he gave to them for the preparation. It wasn't when the Passover was to be that they were uncertain of. It was the where. So let's get back to that evening portion of the 14th of Nisan. That very night, the night that the firstborn of Egypt were killed, that's the night that Christ was betrayed and handed over to the authorities. He went through an illegal nighttime trial and then, of course, was crucified. That started around 9 a.m. in the daytime portion of the 14th of Nisan, the same time frame that Israel began departing Egypt. Christ dies around 3 p.m. and was then placed in a tomb just before sunset. Night falls, and now we're back again at the 15th of Nisan. The night to be much observed is here again. Now, rather than Israel being at an inflection point, it's Jesus' disciples who have a choice to make. They were at the doorstep of something new. That night, however, they no doubt were watching and praying, uncertain what was going to happen. But by watching and praying, they were following the instruction God had given in Exodus 12 and verse 42. I have to imagine there was a much more urgent aspect to their prayers that night. I mean, just think about it. If you were in the disciples' sandals, you had seen your leader, Jesus, who you believed to be the Messiah and the leader of this movement that you were a part of. He was put to death. If they could do that to him, what's to say you're not next? It had to have been a very solemn evening, watching and wondering what might happen. But I have no doubt that God was watching over the disciples as well, keeping them safe just as he was protecting Israel. And just like ancient Israel, the apostles and disciples were about to encounter significant change in their life. They had to choose. Were they going to be fearful? Or would they listen to Christ's words and trust in God? Today, of course, we have the benefit of knowing what happened in the days after Christ's death. So, I ask again, why do you keep the night to be much observed? A third answer is that so we remember Christ's sacrifice, a sacrifice that he made for each one of us, a sacrifice made to redeem us and deliver us from spiritual Egypt. The night to be much observed is not some historical event that we're remembering. It should also call to mind the choice that you and I have made. Whether you were raised in God's church or came in later, we all hit that same inflection point. We come to the realization that we have to decide, are we going to follow God's ways or are we going to go the way of the world? It is only through God's calling and Christ's sacrifice that we can come to that decision and move forward. Let's now move on to the third section and see what Paul and Peter have to say about that decision that we make and about remaining vigilant. Because remember, the night to be much observed is a night of vigilance. So let's start with Paul's writings to the Romans in Romans chapter 6. So if you turn over there to Romans 6, we will read verses 16 and 8 through 18. And Paul makes it very, very clear what it is that we're deciding between. So again, Romans 6, and starting in verse 16. Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one's slaves whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness? But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And having been set free from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. And this captures the progress, the path that we go through. At one point, we were all slaves to sin, just as the Israelites were Pharaoh's slaves. After the Passover, Israel was set free. And after the New Testament Passover, we were set free through Christ's sacrifice. Though, just as Israel had something to do to be passed over that night, we have to do something for Christ's death to redeem us. We have to decide, are we going to go God's way or are we going to go back to the way of the world? Once we make that decision, we then have to act. And that brings us to the fourth answer for why you and I keep the night to be much observed. We keep it to remember the decision that we made to follow God to freedom. A freedom that was made possible only through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And as I studied this topic, I did come into a fifth possible answer. So let's dig a little bit more into this concept of shemor, which indicates a vigil. Throughout the Bible, Old Testament and New, instruction to remain vigilant abounds. Let's turn over to see what Peter had to say in 1 Peter chapter 5. And he reminds us why this vigil is so critical to us. So again, this is 1 Peter chapter 5, and we're going to start in verse 8. First Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Here, the devil is taking the place of Pharaoh. He is the Pharaoh ruling over this world right now. And he wants to keep us all from being able to make it into God's coming kingdom. Continuing on in verse 9. Resist him steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. But may the God of all grace, who called us to his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after you have suffered a while, perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you. Now think about that. After you have suffered for a while, well, how long was Israel in Egypt? They were there for 430 years before they were freed. After that, they wandered in the wilderness for another 40 years before finally making it to the promised land. That same concept applies to us. We don't know how long it's going to take until God brings us to perfection, until he strengthens us and settles us in our promised land. Still, we can have faith that it will happen one day. God is freeing us so we can have that opportunity to enter into his kingdom. But until that day comes, we must remain vigilant. And that, brethren, is the fifth possible answer to the question of why do you keep the night to be much observed? It's because it reminds us of the fact that we must maintain our vigilance. So let's review a few other passages that reinforce this idea of vigilance. Paul puts it concisely for us in 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 13. I'll just read this for you. Watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong. Now the Greek word used for watch here means to give something strict attention, to be cautious, and to be active. We have to be actively watching to avoid distractions that would keep us from reaching the kingdom of God. Now that might feel overwhelming at times, but we're reminded to also be brave. Well, how can we be brave with all that's going on in the world around us? Because God is watching over us. Though we commemorate the night of watching once a year, God watches over us every single day. We see that idea of watchfulness from Paul again in the book of Colossians. This is in Colossians 4 and verse 2. Continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. Here, the word translated as vigilant, that's the same Greek word for watch from 1 Corinthians. To it, Paul adds that we are to be in prayer, that is, talking with God. And not only that, we're to be thankful. Thankful for what? That we were freed from sin by Christ's sacrifice, and by the fact that we are being given an opportunity to be called children of God. That carries on through Paul's writings. You may wish to jot down 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 6 through 11, which for time we will pass over this. But in there he talks about why we are being vigilant, and he also talks about that we're not just being vigilant for ourselves, we're being vigilant for each other. We're to demonstrate an agape love for each other. We're supposed to comfort and edify one another. And we're also supposed to help each other to be vigilant, to remember that need to be vigilant. And why is that? It's because God has freed us from slavery and has appointed us to obtain salvation. Our adversary knows that, and he's constantly looking for ways to devour us. We need to remain vigilant, especially at the start of the Holy Day season. As we examine ourselves before Passover, we might start to get dragged down. We might be discouraged by our shortcomings, rather than being encouraged by seeing how far we truly have come. We should be honest about our shortcomings, but also about our forward progress. If we're drawn into focusing only on the negatives, well, that's a distraction tactic that Satan's using against you. Of course, these attacks seem to start to ramp up as the holy days arrive. So it only makes sense to keep a night every year reminding us of Israel's vigil, a vigil where not only Israel was watching, but God was watching too. So today, We covered five possible answers to the question of why you keep the night to be much observed. It's because God has commanded it, to remember that God brought Israel out of Egypt with a mighty hand, to remember Christ's sacrifice for us, to remember the decision that we made to follow God out of spiritual Egypt, and to remember that we need to remain vigilant against the adversary. Now, these are just a few possible answers that I've presented. There are no doubt many others. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it, if you have other ideas, and perhaps this is something you could be discussing at the table at your own night to be much observed gatherings. This will help you to recall your own reasons and also give insight to the others that you're talking with. That's exactly what we're told to do in Exodus 13 and verse 8. And you shall tell your son in that day, saying, "This is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt." We're reminded, we're helping others remember what the Lord did for us. Our answers are our own, but they can also help to edify and encourage our brethren. So as we approach the night to be much observed, let's remember our own journey. Let's realize how far we've come, and let's maintain that vigilance. We need to remember that God is also vigilant for us. He's watching over us. So this night to be much observed is an important part of God's commands. It's a remembrance of Israel's past, but also our own. It's also a night that points us to our future. The future that's only possible through Christ's sacrifice. The instruction for the night is only held in a single verse, but it still should resonate very strongly with us today. We can and should give thought to why we keep the night to be much observed. Just think about how this one verse, this one instruction, reflects in your own life today and what it means for your own personal journey towards God's kingdom. To conclude, I'm going to read Exodus 12 and verse 42 one last time. And as it's read, think about the question, why do I keep the night to be much observed? It is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations.